This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Wes Anderson, directed and co-wrote the new comedy Rushmore. Our film critic, John Powers, described it as pulling off the miraculous feat of being a completely fresh teen comedy. For Rushmore, Anderson won the New Generation Filmmaker Award from the LA Film Critics Association. He won the MTV Best New Filmmaker Award in 1996 for his first film, Bottle Rocket. Rushmore stars Jason Schwartzman as Max Fisher, a 10th grader at Rushmore Academy. He's a scholarship student who's the head of every club, loves the school, but flunks out anyways and ends up in public school. He's also fallen in love with Miss Cross, a teacher at Rushmore, and has enlisted one of the school's benefactors, played by Bill Murray, to help win her over. But Murray's fallen in love with her, too. Here they are at a restaurant, celebrating the success of a new play by Max that he's just staged at his public school. Max is angry that the teacher he has a crush on has brought along a date.
I like your nurse's uniform, guy.
These are OR scrubs.
Oh, are they? Well, they're totally inappropriate for the occasion.
Well, I didn't know we were going to dinner.
That's because you weren't invited.
Take it easy, Max.
You were the one that ordered him a whiskey and soda.
So what's wrong with that? I can write a hit play. Why can't I have a little drink to unwind myself? So tell me, Curly, how do you know Miss Cross?
We went to Harvard together.
Oh, that's great. I wrote a hit play and directed it. So I'm not sweating it either.
Can we get a check, please?
What do you think you're doing?
Getting a check.
No, you're not. Excuse me. I just want to thank you for accommodating us. You see, we only thought we were going to be three, but someone invited himself along, so I apologize. It's
quite all right, sir.
Okay.
Very well.
You're being rude, Max.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to figure out why you brought this gentleman to my play and my dinner, which was invitation only. Would you like me to pass you the creamer, dog?
Yes, please.
What is wrong with you?
What is wrong with you? You hurt my feelings! This night was important to me!
How did I hurt your feelings?
Oh, my God! I wrote a hit play! And I'm in love with you.
Now, Rushmore is really dependent on having a terrific young actor who can play a 15-year-old, and I think that must be hard to find. You were really lucky. You found someone really terrific in Jason Schwartzman. Were you worried, though, for a while that it would be hard to find someone who was really good and could play a 15-year-old?
Yeah, well, we spent a year trying to find somebody to play that part, and we really had no movie if we didn't have someone great. And what happened was after all this time, and we'd searched all over America, we were searching Canada. We had casting directors in every state, and then eventually we opened it up to England. Me and my co-writer Owen Wilson had decided that we could have an English actor who would be doing a fake English accent to play the character, which would actually be a real English accent, but in the context of the movie, it would be fake. We'd gotten that desperate that we were coming up with those kind of ideas. And then this kid Jason Schwartzman came in, and I just knew he was nothing like what I had sort of planned. You know, I thought we were physically looking for a 15-year-old Mick Jagger, and he was sort of a 15-year-old Dustin Hoffman kind of. But then as soon as he did the scene, he auditioned and read a scene, and then I just felt like we had him. And I realized that the main thing I was looking for was someone who was 15 years old or 16 years old who had the sort of presence and force to carry, to be the center of a movie. And that's what I'd been sort of waiting for. And all the other ideas of the preconceptions of what it ought to be like, I threw them out the window as soon as I realized I had someone who could kind of be the star of a movie.
Now, Schwartzman is Talia Shear's Talia Shear's son, and Talia Shear is Francis Coppola's sister, and plays the sister of Al Pacino in the Godfather movies. So
right,
he must have been at least acquainted with movies.
He'd been on some sets, but he wasn't really brought up around. I don't know. He tells it that he's not, that he didn't grow up on movie sets. I know he visited them. But he'd never acted before.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd obviously been around creative people all his life.
Now you also cast Bill Murray in the role of the self-made tycoon who becomes Max's helper and then his rival. Why did you see Bill Murray in the role? Bill Murray's great. Did he ask to be in the film, or did you approach him?
He was someone that we had in mind when we were writing the script. And we had always thought that he was, you know, we weren't going to be able to afford him, or we weren't going to be able to get access to him. And those things just proved to be wrong. And I'd always loved him there's some movies where he's doing something very different from his sort of comic persona. Like Ed Wood or Mad Dog and Glory, Tootsie, Razor's Edge also. And so it was sort of with those performances in mind. And then when I met him, I thought that he had all kinds of things that we could sort of draw on for the character and kind of tap into. He'd never had a family in a movie before. And he's got 5 kids and he's been a father for 17 years or something. So there were all kinds of things that, and I'm always excited to see him in an unusual role. So all those things kind of fed into it.
Did he do much improvising within the film?
We didn't, because I thought it was going to be a thing where we just hand him the scene and step back and he kind of wings it, which I think he's done on lots of movies. But you know, as soon as we started working on it, we started to feel like there was a story that we wanted to tell that was in the script, and you know, Owen and I had worked hard on the script, and we sort of felt good about it, and then Bill kind of agreed with that, and we just sort of stuck to the script. Very very quickly, we sort of figured that out.
There's a scene when he's at a party in his own home in the backyard by the pool, but he's so alienated from the party that he climbs up on the diving board with a cigarette and a glass of scotch in his hand and then just kind of like dives in and probably plans on staying underwater until he sees a kid swimming around there. Was that all in the script?
Yeah, that was in the script. That was sort of a scene that was, the first half of the scene was sort of a Cheever kind of thing, of a midlife crisis kind of alcoholic haze. And then the second half of the scene is, I think, steals a little bit from The Graduate. Because there's a scene in The Graduate where Dustin Hoffman is, he's given a birthday present and it's a diving suit, and he jumps in the water and then he just stays down there away from the party that his parents are throwing for him. And that's kind of what Bill Murray does in this scene. He just stays under.
Even though the film is set in the present and the center of the film is a 15-year-old, a lot of the records that you use in the movie are from the 60s, including Chad and Jeremy's Summer Song, which I thought was an unusual choice. Why so many 60s records, and particularly why that one?
Yeah, well, initially my plan was to score the whole movie with songs by the Kinks, because I sort of felt like the character that he's playing is very, he sees himself as a total establishment figure. And, you know, I think he wants to be headmaster of the school one day. But what's really going on in his mind is all the usual kind of teenage, adolescent, angsty kind of anger and everything. So that's why, you know, the Kinks would not be the music that he would listen to, but it would be sort of his emotional state. And then I sort of expanded it to the whole British invasion because I started doing some research on it. And that Chad and Jeremy song was just one where I listened to the song and it made me think of a whole montage for the story. So I just kind of figured out the visuals to go with that song. I sort of felt like it belonged at a certain point in the story. So that one actually kind of inspired the sequence that it goes with.
And you didn't think it was unusual to have music from a different period than the period being described in the movie?
No, I don't really usually use the music in a way that connects too literally with what's happening in the story. And I also think the movie is sort of a fable in a way. The clothes that the people wear and the design of the sets and things, it doesn't really reflect anything in reality exactly. It's slightly off reality. And it sort of, and it, I think it kind of lets the movie have a, it kind of gives it a sort of tone where it has a, its own logic and things where you might in real life say, well, they would never let him do that. He would never be able to get away with that. In this world, they sort of make sense. They're sort of logical.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Wes Anderson. He directed and co-wrote the new movie comedy Rushmore. Let's take a short break here and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Wes Anderson. He directed and co-wrote the new movie comedy Rushmore, and he also co-wrote and directed the film Bottle Rocket. I want to ask you about your first movie, Bottle Rocket. It's about two good friends and their buddy who are starting to pull off these robberies inspired by one of the friends who has probably watched a lot of movies and TV shows, but he wants to pull off these robberies like they do in the movies, like they do in heist movies. And he wants the secret signals and the detailed plans and the orders that he gives everybody. What inspired this story?
Well, the actual characters came from, was mostly inspired by people we knew and kind of the friendships among our gang in Texas at that time. And so the story was originally not, I think the heart of the story is not a crime, it's not a crime kind of story. The crime stuff was something, the way they have the secret signals and the safe crackers and all that kind of stuff is about, that's the same way that we're interested in crime, as something from movies. So that way, you know, there's a big robbery at the end of the movie, and for me, the main reason that that robbery even exists is so that we can have a chance for the characters to throw smoke bombs, really. And there's another scene where they rob a bookstore, which that's just really, I worked at this bookstore, and I always thought, God, it would be so easy to rob this place. So that's how we end up having them rob a bookstore. And when they rob the bookstore, they wear these pieces of tape on their nose, which are their disguises. And that came from this TV show called Del Vecchio that Judd Hirsch was in, where there was a scene where these guys had mugged this old woman, but she couldn't identify any of them because they had tape on their nose and it distracted her. And at the end of the thing, Judd Hirsch has this great idea that he brings everyone in for a lineup, and she can't tell who's who, and then he tells them all to put tape on their nose, and then she can pick the guy. Exactly. So those were sort of those were our influences. So,
was the idea here to create characters who borrowed too much from movies and TV shows?
Yes, I think they borrowed way too much from. We probably borrowed too much, and so did they.
Now, did you do that in your life? Were there characters or particular movies that you imitated?
There are movies that we've all seen a million times that we're sort of almost unconsciously quoting, regularly. And then some of the characters in the movie are just our friends playing themselves. Like there's one character, this guy named Kumar, who's this old Indian, kind of older Indian man, who we've used in both Bottle Rocket and Rushmore. And he's our friend who teaches yoga and lives above this coffee shop that his son owned in Dallas. And he just, you know, was someone we knew well. And always, you know, anytime we're thinking of a story, he's one of the first things we come up with is what is Kumar going to play.
In Bottle Rocket, the characters need some experience actually robbing a house. So they decide to rob the house of one of the guys who's doing the robbery. They decide to rob his mother's home. But he says that you can't rob his mother's earrings because he just gave it to her as a gift. And he makes a list of other things that no one is allowed to rob. And I want to play a scene in which he's just found out that his friend, who's the ringleader of this little group, actually did take the mother's earrings.
Man, you got another ball. Should I play your game?
Liz Dignan, I know you remember the list because you signed it. Things Dignan's not supposed to touch.
The thing is, I can't be sorting through all that in the middle of a burglary.
Okay? I bought the earrings for my mother on her birthday. I went down, I picked them out
Okay, one thing is, every value item in the house was on that list.
Hey, maybe we should have robbed your house. You ever think of that? No, I bet that never crossed your mind.
What inspired that scene and the whole idea of robbing your own family's home?
We wanted to sort of quietly reveal the fact that these thieves cannot be taken seriously. And we wanted to sort of do it in a kind of a left-handed way where it's unstated, but where you would suddenly realize what the situation was, because they robbed the house, and then they sort of split up the loot and get ready to celebrate, and then over the course of a conversation, you don't even know what one of them's getting upset about, and slowly you begin to realize what's happening, and I think it kind of. At the moment when you realize that that's what the robbery was, robbing their own house, and that it was very regulated. They were only supposed to steal things that were basically that wouldn't be noticed. Then I think you kind of get the tone of the movie and the kind of characters they are. And that it's not a gritty mean streets story of crime. It's kind of a more good-natured... although Mean Street's a bad example, because Mean Street is actually about, you know, his own, Scorsese's own experiences with these guys he knew in his neighborhood. So it's more like a Mean Streets kind of thing. But you can just know that it's not a true story about guys who are criminals. It's a story about some guys who grew up in some neighborhood together and ran around in each other's backyards.
Did you see Mean Streets and think, now how does this apply to me in my suburban Texas neighborhood?
Well, Mean Streets is a movie that Owen and I both always loved, it's such a foreign place. It's like a foreign film for us, kind of. But I think it influenced us in terms of the way it tells a very personal story, and he kind of finds a sort of style in which he can tell. You know, it's almost a sort of a documentary about his neighborhood and certain people that grew up there, and then he's kind of found a way to make it into a dramatic movie.
Did you ever steal things when you were a teenager and think it was really cool?
I never even stole a pair of scissors when I was a teenager. I was extremely uptight about that.
Did you have friends who did?
I was like a very righteous teenager and kind of humorless.
Humorless?
In some ways, I mean, when I look back, I just don't understand who I was. I feel so alienated from that person. I feel like I was a real stick in the mud.
What was the turning point for you of becoming who it is that you are now?
Probably some movie. I can't think of what movie it would have been. It's probably some movie where I started thinking, you know, that's really what I want to be more like. It was probably like some kind of Catcher in the Rye experience or something, you know?
Yeah, it's really hard to change who you are deep down, no matter how good the movie is.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe a book can do it.
Maybe a book. there you go. I read someplace that you made Super 8 movies when you were a kid.
Yeah, my father gave me a Super 8 camera when I was about 8 or 9, and my brothers and I made just about 100 Super 8s over the years.
What kind of movies were they?
Well, there was a long series of Indiana Jones movies, Indiana Jones in different countries going after different artifacts, and then there were a lot of private investigator stories, what else? We had one that was basically about a volcano going off, and it was animated with models, and it was that kind of thing. We had a Lego science fiction movie with little Lego spaceships exploding and that kind of thing.
Did any adults see those Super 8s and think, the kids got talent?
Well, I don't know if people were thinking that I had talent, but we were relentlessly showing those movies to anyone who would watch them. We had regular screenings. We would sometimes charge admission.
Really? Who would pay besides friends and family who felt obliged?
That's it.
Right. And you were spared the embarrassment of reviews, right?
Right. We only got encouragement.
When you were a kid, did you go to see kid movies or did you go see adult movies? And what were the kid movies like when you were young?
Well, you know, the movies we really loved, we loved the Pink Panther movies back then. And there was other, like the Bad News Bears movies, there was a whole series of those. The first one was really good and the other ones didn't really live up to the title. But there were a bunch of good Disney movies at that time. And there was one called Candleshoe with Jodie Foster that I really loved. And I think the movies that kind of, and maybe this ways that those movies might influence a movie like this, especially a movie like that, like Candleshoe, there's sort of a mystery in a movie like that, and a way that you sort of, are kind of like when you read a novel when you're 14 years old or 12 years old, you sort of get into the world of the novel, and you're more committed to that world and get sort of lost in that world in a way that's sort of hard to do later in your life, kind of. And I sort of had the same experience with some movies where you just give yourself completely over and get submerged into it, kind of.
Do you know what your next movie is going to be?
Yeah, then our next movie, that's a script that Owen and I are working on now, and it's set in New York, and it's about a family of geniuses, and it's a large ensemble cast, and we're just getting rolling on it. Hopefully we'll be shooting it around the end of the year.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Terry.
Wes Anderson directed and co-wrote the films Rushmore and Bottle Rocket. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.